such nice, peppy music to start the Ask Beattie Show. Welcome, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Fredos, and welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. And for those of you who are discovering the Ask Beattie Show for the first time, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I'm the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships for better, for worse, forever. Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is a book. I wish I had had this book when I started my dating and relationship life many, many years ago, that teaches us exactly how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. I'm also a columnist and a national speaker. And many of you I know have probably seen me on national television. And I have a private practice here in very, very hot and humid New York City and East Hampton. So what is the Ask Beattie Show really all about? Well, it is about empowerment. I want all of us to feel that we have, at least to a greater degree, empowerment over our lives. So on this show, we talk about all of the things that we actually can do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. So we talk about mental health issues and what is going on in terms of the latest treatments in the field of mental health. We talk about sexuality and, of course, relationships. And also what and how we need to live our lives to maximize our physical and emotional well-being. And my mantra, and it's been my mantra for many, many years, is regardless of the issue or the issues, that we need to really take whatever steps that we can take to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the things that get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And I have to tell you that, you know, it is not an easy terrain for any of us, because at different times in our life, whether or not it's family problems or financial problems, or we're dealing with the upshot of political issues in our lives, nobody ever promised that that life was just going to be one happy little journey. But it is important, my friends, to be able to deal as best as we can deal. And of course, that means also reaching out and asking for help, because we don't need to navigate life's journey on our own. Because if you're looking, for example, at what's going on in the area of depression in this country, 17 million adults in the United States suffer from depression, which actually translates into a little over 7% of all adults. And for women, not surprisingly, 8.7%, because we tend to express our feelings a lot more openly, and I think honestly, than men do. So perhaps that explains the somewhat higher statistics. And if we're looking at, for example, domestic violence in this country, 4 women are killed every day by their so-called intimate partner. And what about anxiety disorders? Well, statistics tell us that there are about 40 million Americans who are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And suicide, and these are statistics from the Suicide Center for Disease Control, that you may be surprised to know that suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States for all ages. And for example, nearly 800,000 people die by suicide in the world each year, which is roughly about one death every 40 seconds. So if you find that you are getting into a place in your life where your depression feels like it is really out of control, in fact, the depression is really controlling you, and you may have suicidal thoughts, or you may have a plan, You know, the very, very best thing that you can do is reach out to a family member or a friend. And of course, you know, when people are suffering from severe clinical depression, the well-meaning family and friends, I mean, they may give you all kinds of support and all kinds of advice. But, you know, when things start to really bottom out, you do need to seek out the best possible professional help that that you can find. And if we're looking at divorce, and I know that a lot of these statistics, they're depressing to hear, but we have to get real about what is going on in our lives. The divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. 67% of second marriages also end in divorce, and 74% of couples marrying for the third time find themselves in a courtroom, although these days I think that fewer people, in fact, I don't know anybody who's actually been to court. Things are done on Zoom these days, but the reality is that we don't seem to be doing better. You know, people would think the more often we do something, the more often we participate in a particular task, the better we are going to get. Well, that does not seem to be the case when it comes to marriage. But I have some really, really good news that I am going to share with you in a few minutes about how to never, never make a mistake in love again. And this is based on Discover the Path to Lasting Love, years of clinical experience. So over the years, I've learned a few things that I really, you know, am very, very delighted to be able to share with you. And also, you know, I look at these statistics and very upsetting. If we're looking at teenage dating violence, and the statistics tell us that nearly 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. You know, when I think about it, when I was a teenager growing up in Winnipeg, Canada, you know, one of the worst things that could have happened is if the boy kissed you and you didn't want him to kiss you. I mean, there was no talk. And I think that there was probably very, very little dating violence or dating abuse. I know that people would, you know, some people would maybe drink and they would drink too much. But this was something when I was a teenager, we never heard about it. I know no one that ever experienced it. And of course, you then start to wonder, you know, is it possible that this kind of thing really was going on so many years ago, and like so many things, that it was never talked about. And what is also really interesting is that currently only 33% of teens who are in abusive relationships have ever told anyone about the abuse, and 81% of parents believe that teen dating violence is not an issue. And I think that relationship education, it is key, and it should not wait until high school and college, when we get to a point in our lives when we want to start dating and talking about relationships. I mean, this is something that should be a part, an integral part of the school curriculum, beginning at a very, very young age. You know, when I lived in Montreal, and of course, you all know that I am Canadian, I did my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill University in Montreal. And my first job after graduating was a school social worker in the inner city schools. And it was wonderful because we had pupil personnel teams and the teachers and the guidance counselors and the principals and the vice principals. Everybody was engaged in making sure that the children had a really complete education over and above learning about math and science and reading and social studies. And of course, all of these subjects are so terribly important, but mental health was really a priority in those days when I first And then a few years after I was a school social worker and I was working with the families and I was working with the children and I would, make home visits, I became one of the three directors of the Greater Montreal School Social Services program. And I had free rein in what I was able to do is that I designed and was actually able to implement relationship education programs beginning in the first grade. And it was wonderful. You know, I would go into some of the classrooms and I would train my staff to go into the classrooms and we would be asking the children, you know, what happens when you're sad? And we really wanted them to get in touch with their emotionality, how they felt. Did they feel sad? Did they feel mad, angry? And in that way, we are able to teach the children so early on to be aware of emotions and not just to be aware of emotions, but to learn how to express emotions well, which is something that all of us could certainly learn to do better. But the fact is that, yes, relationship education is key, even though you may not be a student in a high school or in a university. I think it is an ongoing process for all of us to learn the ABCs of healthy relationships. But, you know, again, over and above relationships, there's so many other things that we need to do every single day to improve our health, our emotional health, and our physical health. And of course, eating well. And Dr. Gary Null, he talks about this every single day, the importance of a plant-based diet, and really have to buy into all of this. I think it's just so easy to make all kinds of excuses. We make a lot of excuses about why we can't exercise and why we can't eat well. And the reality is that we all then pay the consequences of our not living lives in ways that are in our best interest. And of course, you know, I look at the people in Sardinia and I always find this information really, really helpful. And for example, people in Sardinia, they live the longest, but they eat healthily and they interact and socialize. And they also sleep 8 hours a night and they take naps. And I think that with COVID, what happened, you know, over the past year is that people became extremely isolated and alienated. And I think that Zoom has been, you know, great. It's been a lifesaver in many, many ways, but there is no substitute for that face-to-face interpersonal interaction where you can actually hug somebody and hold somebody and look at somebody in the eyes in the same room where you happen to be. So socialization is so important. You know, loneliness and being alone, I mean, it really impacts our lives in every possible way. So that now that things are becoming open and you may find yourself as someone who has not socialized, much in the last year or so, you know, let's make a plan together. What can you do to begin to meet other people, whether or not you're looking for a romantic relationship or a serious lifelong relationship? There always needs to be a plan. And in my world, I try to think of life as, you know, problem solution. I mean, we can sit and we can focus on the problems and what happened and what didn't happen in our past lives. And yet we can't change our history, so that we really have to get back on track and figure out, despite the upsets that we've had, despite the bad news that we may have just received in the mail, we need to sit down with ourselves and, of course, with trusted friends, family, and experts if necessary, and figure out what are the things that we actually can do to begin to resolve the problems and the issues that get in the way of our life. And if we have that kind of a mindset, we are always moving forward. forward, because it is so, so easy to simply get stuck. So if you are stuck when it comes to your physical well-being or your emotional well-being or your relationship or your sex life, again, I'm wanting you, this is your homework. And of course, I give my patients homework every single time after every single session they leave. They leave my office. Now, of course, I'm starting to see people in person, which is just great, with tasks that they need to attend to. So if you have tasks to attend to, you know, I really want you to think about, what will this next first step be? It could be exercise. You know, you've talked about the weight that you've gained in the last year. So, okay, you've gained the weight. So now what can you do? Yes, you can watch what you're eating, but you need to start to exercise. And maybe you've contemplated trying weight training, which is something that is really, really helpful. Or maybe you're someone that just needs a more peaceful kind of inner peace. So you may try perhaps yoga or meditation or massage, or simply even taking a really nice shower or a bath, a bubble bath, just sitting there. And this is all about doing what is in your best interest, so that you have to be very mindful of not getting in your own way. And I think that we all have a tendency, if we are not mindful at times, to get in our own way in all kinds of situations. And of course, having supportive people in your life and eliminating toxins. And of course, you know, these days when people talk about toxins, they're usually talking about chemicals. Of course, when I talk about toxins, I want people to think about the toxicity that may exist in their lives with people and in their relationships. And toxic people will kill us in one way or another if we allow it. So it means being really, really honest with ourselves about the people who we interact with and the people who we let into our lives. And that includes, friends and family. You know, other things that can really help to make the days brighter and better, things like positive visualization, dancing, listening to music, herbal teas, if you happen to be an herbal tea person, aromatherapy, essential oils. These are little things, and they're not expensive. And if they're going to give you a sense of serenity and a sense of peace for a short period of time, be good to yourself. And just like the Nike logo, just do it. Just do it. And also, what I have found over the years is that in helping others and giving back, it has given me so much. I mean, I feel so privileged that for all of these years, I've had an opportunity to work with thousands of children and adolescents and men and women who have really entrusted me with their lives and relationships. And I can tell you that on both ends, it's been a learning experience, certainly, hopefully for my patients, but also very, very much for myself. You know, something else that I've noticed, Jim and I, we live on the Upper West Side in New York City, and I have never, literally never seen so many people walking their dogs. And we have a dog, Cha-Cha. And, just having that companion and being able to go outside and walk the dog. And in walking the dog, I mean, you are surely, regardless of where you live in the country or in the world, you are surely going to be in a position where you're going to be meeting people. And who knows who you can meet walking your dog. So, you know, it may be that it may not be something. Hi, everybody. I think there was a little bit of a mishap here, but I am back. And I was talking about some of the wonderful things that can actually happen. One of the things that can actually happen I am not exactly sure what's happening right now. I'm back, and I'm not exactly sure what just happened, but we talk about problem solution, and I'm hoping that I am back on the air and that you are now able to hear me, and we can continue with the program. But we're talking about how we need to be very mindful, very, very mindful of doing things that are really in our best interest. You know, and one of the things, I was talking to a patient of mine a couple of days ago, and she said that she was not a support group person, like 12-step program, but that she was lonely and she didn't have any friends and she didn't have any family who she wanted to really connect with. And she went to an AA meeting, even though she does not have an alcohol problem. And she said that the sustenance and the nurturing that she experienced, you know, during the couple of hours that she was at the meeting, and that she was able to talk to people afterwards, that it really made such a big, big difference in her life. So again, we need to think about our problems in terms of the actions and the possible solutions that we can find that can change our lives in a very, very, very positive way. Because the fact is that we all go through so many ups and downs, you know, in our lives. And there are not always perfect solutions, and yet we have to keep moving. We have to keep trying to do the things that can really bring us some happiness. And sometimes it's very, very challenging. But, you know, as I have tried to tell you and encourage you over the last number of years, is that we do not need to take this journey on our own. And, you know, one of the things that I had actually mentioned a couple of weeks ago is that some of the drugstores now are going to be offering therapy. So just think, you're having a bad day and you decide maybe to go and buy some nail polish or some lipstick. And you see that there is a possibility for you to actually talk with someone, a trained counselor. I mean, what better could that be? And I think that if this is the mindset that is starting to appear in corporate America, I think it is a really, really positive thing. For example, CVS and Walgreens and even Walmart are beginning to offer counseling services for customers. So we're going to have to see how this is going to, play out. I think it's terrific. You know, let's just say that you are having a bad day. You have nobody to talk to, and you walk into a drugstore, and I don't know how much any of this is going to cost, and if you have insurance or if you don't have insurance, but just to have that human contact and just to be able to tell somebody that you're having a tough time and to have somebody to talk to who is going to listen to you and who may hopefully even come up with some good ideas that will definitely help you to move forward. So maybe mental health is going to be something that we are going to be taking much, much more seriously in this country. And, you know, with the end of the pandemic, this can really, really be a wonderful restart, for your life. Because as the pandemic recedes, although I have to tell you, 50, 60% of the people that are walking around the Upper West Side here in New York City are still wearing masks. But I think that as the pandemic does recede, some people are worried that the past year of lockdowns and restrictions and times at home, that it was a missed opportunity. But the reality is, of course, is that we can't change what's happened. but it can be a new beginning. You know, one of the biggest obstacles to change has always been that we tend to have established routines that are certainly hard to break. But the pandemic, they shattered many people's routines, you know, setting us up for a reset, which is not a bad thing. It actually could be a terrific thing because we've all changed our routines so much. And I think that many of us have realized during the pandemic that some of the things that we were doing, and we have to really, really be honest with ourselves, before COVID-19, really, in fact, weren't the kinds of things that were leading to flourishing in our lives. And I think that many of us were realizing that aspects, as an example, of our work and our family life and even our relationships probably need to change if we want to be happier. So I think that we have to, A, really be honest with ourselves and accept the challenge for a new chapter. And naturally, the start of a new chapter, it is a great time for change and the pages will turn quickly because now that we are emerging from the restrictions of the pandemic, social scientists are saying that it is actually an ideal time to start thinking about what you've learned. Because I talk about this all the time, lessons to be learned. So what have you learned about yourself and about your life in the past year? What are the new habits, as an example, that you want to keep? And which parts of your pre-pandemic life do you want to change? Because I think it's time for all of us to rethink our priorities so that we have to ask ourselves, how am I going to schedule my time? Am I wasting time? Am I using my time well? Am I making sure that there is enough alone time for me? Because when you think about this too, we only have a limited window to be deliberate about it because pretty quickly we will have new patterns established and we probably won't rethink it again, you know, for quite some time. And I think too that a lot of us have realized how fragile some of the things were that gave us joy before, from going to the grocery store, to going out to a restaurant with friends, going to a movie, giving your mom a hug whenever you'd like. And my hope is that we will emerge. And I'm seeing really positive signs with friends and with patients that we will emerge from this pandemic with a bit more appreciation for the little things in life. So are you actually willing to do a little bit of introspection? And I used to ask people to do this, you know, once a year, to look at their life in the past year and see what it was, you know, how well it was or how badly things went. And then to think about, you know, what kind of changes are you going to want to make? And I think that we need to do this really on a regular basis where we're evaluating, are we living our life in ways that are truly, truly in our best interest? And only you know if the way you are living and the people who you are interacting with, whether or not all of this, or at least most of it, is truly working for you. And if it's not, it is so easy to just complain and whine and moan and poor me. But it is just so important then to be able to sit down with yourself honestly and ask yourself what is working across the board and what is not working. And then be prepared. Don't expect that you're going to make all the changes in 24 hours or in a week, but to take one priority and begin to do things in different ways that are going to start to give you some pleasure, some happiness, and hopefully some joy. Well, there was an article yesterday in the New York Times, and the headline, this was in the Modern Love column, and the headline was, "Why won't anyone help me in this sex shop?" And my husband, Jim, he gave me the article. I mean, I'm part of what I do. I'm a psychotherapist and also a sex therapist. And this article was written by a woman, Diana D.V. Hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Diana. She's 83 years old and legally blind, and she wrote this column about her experience of going into a sex store. And believe me, you are never too old and it's never too late to be able to get in touch with your body and enjoy sex, whether or not you were lucky enough to have a partner or whether or not you are alone. So I was so fascinated by the article that I actually called Diana, and she is going to be a guest on the show in the next few weeks. And the stereotypes that we have about older people, that they are asexual, that they have lost all desire to have sex. And one experience for me really taught me a lot about older people. I mean, people, some in their 80s and even their 90s, and what their relationships were in terms of their own feelings about sex and their own sexuality. And I lived in Sarasota, Florida for a number of years. And as we all know, there are a lot of older people who live in Florida. And I had two patients who I absolutely loved. They were both widows and they were in their 80s when I actually began to treat them. One was 82, and let's call her Barbara. And the other was 86 when I started to work with her, and let's call her Charlotte. And they had gone through a lot of ups and downs in their lives. They both had recently lost their husbands after many, many, many years of marriage. So we had to deal with the reality of losing a spouse and being alone at that stage of life. But as time went on, and I think for both Barbara and Charlotte, Barbara lived on her own in a condo. And Charlotte lived in a beautiful, beautiful assisted living facility on the water in beautiful Sarasota. So it was about a year after their spouses died that both of these women, and they never met, they didn't know each other, they both wanted to have a dating life. And I thought this was absolutely fantastic. And they both actually knew a lot of people, and both women met men. And this was fantastic. You know, I hear from 20 and 30 year olds the difficulty of finding people and, you know, meeting men or meeting women and having relationships. And these two women, that was what they wanted at this point in their life. So they both started to date. And then they both ended up in exclusive relationships. And I used to go to their homes rather than have them come to my office. It was, you know, a lot easier for me to get into my car than for them to find a way to my office. And Barbara, she'd always been a very, very sexual woman. So sex for her with her new partner, that was not a problem at all. She luxuriated in being touched and fondled. And I remember one day she said to me, she says, "But you know, we can't have intercourse. He's not able to get an erection." But nonetheless, they were able to enjoy each other in every conceivable kind of way. And this was at 82, 83 years old. And I remember I used to say to myself, "I want to be these women when I'm 82 and 85 and 86. And then Charlotte and she wanted to fall in love. She was a former actress, and she just loved the idea of being in love. So she actually, in quotes, fell in love with a much, much, much younger man. And I was very concerned, very, very concerned about this relationship, because I was worried that maybe, you know, he was after her money. But after a while, I mean, they dated for several months, and you know, he seemed to be okay, and Charlotte was very happy. So one day I arrived at her condo, and she says, "Beatty," she says, "I have to ask you a question." I said, "Look," I said, "you can ask me anything. We talk about everything. We've always been very open with one another." She says to me, she said, "I would like you to teach me how to give oral sex." Now, Charlotte is now 86 years old, and she'd been married for forever, and she had a loving relationship, and I guess perhaps oral sex had not been a part of her marriage. So here we are. I mean, and this is really a true story, and it's so wonderful to be able to tell these stories, because they are true, and they actually happened. So we go into her kitchen, and she gets out a banana, and I was able to instruct her about what she needed to do and what she needed to learn to have oral sex. And this is a woman. She died in her early 90s with a smile on her face, and she was someone I really loved these two women. And talk about wonderful, wonderful role models for all of us, because I think that there's a real myth that, you know, if you get to a certain age, you shouldn't be doing this, or you shouldn't be doing that, or you may not have these feelings. And it was a real learning experience for me, you know, living in Sarasota, because I had never treated so many people who were in their, you know, late 70s and 80s and even 90s. So I learned a lot about them and their needs and desires and wants. And, you know, I hope that they also learned a lot about me. But I actually, I received an email earlier today from Diana DeVay's assistant, and she is going to be coming on the show. I'm not exactly sure which date, but I'm going to keep you posted. And I think that we're going to have a really, really interesting discussion about her experience in the sex shop when everybody ignored her. I guess they wondered, you know, why is this older woman who happened to be blind with her assistant, why would she want to be coming into a sex store? Well, totally makes sense to me. And it certainly made sense to her. And she sounds, I talked to her on the phone for a couple of minutes yesterday. It was Sunday. And she sounds absolutely delightful. And I can't wait to have her as a guest. Well, what I promised you was that I was going to give you a preview of my Never Make a Mistake in Love Again presentation that I'm going to be doing live. Yes, live tomorrow. That is Tuesday, June the 29th from 6 to 7 p.m. At the East Hampton Library. Now, unfortunately, this was booked during the pandemic, so that I am going to be doing the show on Zoom. But so this is going to be my practice presentation, and it'll be interesting to hear from you what your thoughts are. Because the reality is that we are not doing well. We are not doing well in the world of relationships. You know, as I mentioned before, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%, 67% divorce rate for second marriages, 73% divorce rate for third marriages. And the domestic violence rates are very, very high. And what's going on? What's going on in the colleges when 30% of college co-eds claim that they have been abused by their so-called intimate partner? So what are some of the possible explanations for this contemporary calamity? It is a calamity. We have therapists and relationship coaches and all of these shows that talk about relationships and mental health. And yet we seem to be continuing in a downward spiral. So some of the possible explanations really are that the mythical belief that love and romance conquer all adversity, if only it were true. And also few really good role models when we were growing up, because you think about it, how many people were actually fortunate to have positive role models for parents to teach us about loving relationships? And if you were one of these people who really saw a loving relationship that went on with mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad, I mean, you really had a jump start on what a healthy relationship really looks like. But unfortunately, most people did not have those role models. And also, when you think about it, there's really a false sense of what healthy relationships are due to all of the misleading and distorted portrayals in movies, in reality television, and popular music. So when we think about it, where do we actually learn about healthy relationships? Not in schools. And in fact, I don't know whether I've ever shared with you my experience as a Florida commissioner. A number of years ago, when I was living in Florida, I actually got a phone call from none other than Governor Jeb Bush. And he appointed me to the Florida State Commission on Marriage and Family Support Initiatives for the sole purpose of being able to, convince the higher-ups in the state of Florida to implement my relationship education program in the schools and in the colleges. And what was really interesting and very frustrating for me is that I met with everyone, with all of the decision makers in the state of Florida. And the reality was that people really didn't care. These were people that could have made the decision to implement the programs or part of the programs. And yet it was very, very clear that healthy relationships and relationship education was simply not a priority at all for people in leadership positions, in social services, in education. And I was actually, I think, very naive and very surprised, because we had a real opportunity to do something positive. And my experience taught me that it was the guidance counselors and the teachers who cared, but the program did not happen. And after my 2-year commissioner appointment, that was the end of my political involvement. And I must say it was very disappointing, but it was what it was. And I took the problem and the disappointment, and have been continuing over the years to try wherever I can to teach my Never Make a Mistake and Love Again program. But also, many people believe that the best way to build stronger families is to attack the barriers keeping people from achieving their full potential. So issues like poverty and racism and sexism and unemployment and addictions are often cited as the primary reasons for the breakdown of relationships. And although they are clearly contributing factors to marital and family strife, removing these barriers alone will not solve the problem. Because I did research with 450 people in the Providence, Boston, and Connecticut areas, which culminated in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is what I discovered, okay? And you can take notes, because this is truly evidence-based. This is something that I have seen over and over again during the past 35 years as a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist, so that there are three things that we really need to do, not just talk about or contemplate, if we want to find and maintain a healthy relationship and never make a mistake in love again. So number one, and this is probably the most important one, and that is that unless each of us is in a good place emotionally, psychologically, and psychiatrically, it is virtually impossible to have a successful relationship with anyone. We need to be willing to deal with our own issues. You know, easy to say that, no, if we find someone, everything is going to be okay. But, you know, our issues, including our abuse of various different kinds, our depression, our anxiety, our early traumas, and the relationship, and I used to say this to my daughter, Jordana, all the time, is that the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake. And we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. And we need to be okay. And then we are going to be in a position to be able to keep our eyes wide open when we are meeting someone. And then we're going to be able to see and look at the reality of the relationship and of the person coming from a strong, strong position, not from a position of depression or neediness or trauma or abuse. So again, you know, if you're hoping, and I think that we all want to have really healthy and successful and wonderful relationships, but first of all, we need to get our own acts together. Number two, and this is a learning curve, again, for everyone, we need to be willing to learn the ingredients that actually go into a successful long-term relationship. So we have to become a student. We have to become a relationship, a healthy relationship student. Do some reading, go to some seminars, and so that you're going to have knowledge. You're going to have maybe new knowledge that you've never had before. I think a lot of people believe, you know, if you have a lot of money, that that's going to be something that will get you through the tough times. Well, I can tell you that in my private practice, I have treated some of the wealthiest and in quotes, powerful people in this country, and their money and their power and their houses and their cars and their yachts, that did not save them from the upsets and the traumas that occurred in their relationships. And then number three, we need to be open to using my formula, which I developed as a result of my research, which teaches people, and this is not romantic, and I'm not even going to apologize anymore for it not being romantic, which teaches people exactly how to assess who's right or wrong for you before, yes, before committing to any serious relationship. And what I have found, and thousands of people have used the formula over the years, my formula changes the way that you look at relationships forever. It educates, it empowers you, and above all, it keeps you safe. So everybody wants to know what the formula is. Well, you're going to have to read the book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And I'm going to be able to briefly go through it. We have a few minutes left in today's show. But what I've found with the research, and for someone like me who is incredibly impatient in my day-to-day life, my research found that it takes about a year to find out who someone is and who someone is not. And the process, unfortunately, cannot be fast forward. You can't meet someone and decide in a day or in a week or in a month that this is going to be my soulmate. I wish that that were the case. And maybe there are people out there who have been lucky, but for most people, the reality is that it really takes some time to play out the points of the game, to really find out who the person is. The other interesting thing that my research found, and I think a lot of people are surprised about this, is that there is no correlation whatsoever between socioeconomic status and relationship success and relationship skill. And that the only significant difference between my inner city patients' relationships and my rich and famous clientele is that the latter can take a weekend trip on their private places or yachts, and that's great, and take a break from their relationship woes, but they have to come back and they have to deal with the same kinds of problems, the infidelities, the communication problems, the sex problems, the children problems. And this takes a lot of knowledge and it takes skill in order to be able to do this. And again, rich or poor, religious or not, educated or not, black or white or Hispanic or gay or straight or transgender, none of these variables, but I have found, and you may be surprised to hear this, correlate with having a healthy, successful, and loving long-term relationship. You know, and I go over this over and over and over again, that relationship success is dependent on relationship education. And we need to find ways to help people finally get it right. And, you know, the schools, our colleges, I know that we're very, very interested in all kinds of subjects. But the fact is that we spend much more time researching cars and grams of fat and real estate than we do our partners. And that is the primary reason that we are getting ourselves into the messes that we are, where, you know, you figure a third marriage and yet looking at a 73% divorce statistic. So, you know, the question really is that if you are interested in wanting to find a healthy, loving, wonderful relationship for yourself, you need to get yourself in a really good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically. You need to learn the ingredients and you have to take the time to play out the reality of your relationship by using my 10-step formula. And, you know, things like, you know, family history, the acorn really doesn't fall far from the tree. You want to look at things like what I call skeletons in the closet, abuse of various different kinds, sexual abuse, physical abuse, substance abuse, issues like depression, anxiety, and other psychiatric problems. You're not going to see this in a month or in 2 months. And when people ask me all the time, what are the two most important ingredients that make or break relationships? I used to apologize because, you know, these are not romantic and sexy. But the reality is that the answer is communication and problem solving, because if we can't talk to each other and if we don't have the skills to work through our problems, we are not going to be able to find and to sustain a healthy relationship with anyone. And of course, we need to look at sex and emotional intimacy, by the way. They are not the same. You can have great sex and have zero emotional intimacy, and you can have great emotional intimacy, and it would be better that you were simply going, you know, to be friends. So there's a lot to talk about with people who are divorced, you know, issues like alimony and child support and exes and do I want to be a step parent? There's so many things that we have to talk about in terms of our assessment and assessing whether or not this person in this relationship is going to be really, really good for us. And, you know, the final thing is that the perfect partner, there's no such thing, but I ask people to consider three questions. And the first question is, what I want and need in a relationship? And write it out, because that is the best way that you can see your answers in your own handwriting. And then number two, what I don't want and need. And you need to write that out as well. And then, of course, the third question is really describe my relationship, what I want and need, what I don't want and need, and what is the reality of my relationship. And then you have to ask yourself, what compromises are you willing to make because some compromises we should never, ever, ever make, such as emotional communication and problem solving and abuse of any kind. So it is a process. It is a process that we all have to really buy into, or of course not buy into, if we are going to be doing what is in our best interest when it comes to finding, maintaining, and sustaining a healthy relationship. Well, everybody, I can't believe the time is 3:56. Where has the time gone today? I hope that some of the commentary has been really helpful to you, and that you will take in, you know, some of the suggestions and the evidence-based research that I have tried to impart to you today. And I leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first message is you need to do everything that you could possibly do to live your life in ways that are in your best interest, which means loving yourself. And the second thing is that we all need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other. So again, thank you so much for tuning in to the Ask Beattie Show. I love your comments. We don't have to agree. We can discuss. We can negotiate. And I look forward to speaking with you next Monday and every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Ask Beattie Show on the Progressive Radio Network. So have a good rest of the day. Be good to yourself. Enjoy this beautiful, beautiful summer weather. And take care, everybody. Bye-bye.